Hey guys, I don't know if you're like me, but I love Count the Dings and everything it has to offer. I just can't find everything I need. You know, I know about Cinephobe, and I know about the mailbag, and I know about Bomb, but that's all we do, right, Amin?
No, we do so much more.
What?
Yeah, absolutely. If you sign up, patreon.com/countthedings, you'll find a plethora of other content, fresh content, extended content, the OG pod overflow, the Cinephobe cold opens that we've taken and made their own thing to live only there, the Rewatchingtons, Bomb in its full and unadulterated cut, early drops of Cinephobe episodes, and so much more.
Said the OG pod. Now, is it new or is it old?
Mace, I'm glad you asked that. It is a new incarnation of the old OG pod.
Oh.
So it's me, Zach, Trey, Waz, Tom.
I love those guys.
Just like we always were, going back to the True Hoop days, we're recreating that magic, recapturing and putting it back out. We're talking hoops, we're talking pop culture, and most importantly, we're talking for 40 minutes for free, but then another specific Patreon exclusive segment for every one of those episodes.
Funny enough about that OG pod, you're getting Tom and Trey on Mondays. You're getting me and Waz, aka Zosny, on Wednesdays. Amin's floating in between.
I'm a floater.
You never know when you're going to get Amin in those, so you got to listen to them all.
And what if I'm not sure what Maze looks like? Because I've always thought he's a fat man with a fedora. He's got a weird voice. How can I see for myself what this Maze character actually looks like?
It's crazy you don't know the answer to this because it's the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page.
What?
The CT5s on the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page. You can look at all of us.
You can get all the OG pods on YouTube too, at Count the Dings 1 on YouTube, at Cinephobe Pod on YouTube. Patreon.com/Count the Dings gets you everything all in one feed. You can link it to your Spotify. And now enjoy the show.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
Tom, are you ready for Top Chef Season 21, Wisconsin?
I'm psyched. I was not super psyched when I found out it was Wisconsin. I was a little bit taken aback initially when I found out it was Top Chef Wisconsin. But after this interview with CJ, which you'll later hear, our listeners will get to hear the lowdown on Wisconsin. And now I'm sold, Kevin. And we've got a new host. Padma has left after 20 seasons. And now we've got Kristen Kish, who's joining the Top Chef judges table officially with Tom Colicchio and Gail Simmons. And with that, Kevin, there's some changes here too. We are not just a podcast anymore. We have launched a Substack. What does that mean? You need to go to packyourknives.com, type in your email, sign up for free at packyourknives.com. But also, we would like you to be a paid subscriber and get all sorts of bells and whistles as a paid subscriber, which is going to be $50 for the entire season, for the entire year, just a one-time payment, and you get everything that we do here on Pack Your Knives. And also, we're going to build a community, a live chat perhaps during an episode or events. You'll get the first dibs on that. And we're going to have more articles, possibly some power rankings. We're basically beefing up our coverage of Top Chef like we are, as we set out to be, NBA writers who are covering Top Chef. We are going to do it a lot bigger and a lot better this upcoming season at Substack. That is packyourknives.com. And for the first week, the opening week, we are giving our audience $10 off the $50 a year subscription. So paid subscribers will get it $40 for the entire season. If you sign up right now, before the launch of the season premiere of Top Chef season 21. So Kevin, lots to get into here. Kristen Kish.
Brand new host, huge shoes to fill. This is one of the biggest moments in Top Chef history. I mean, this is, you're retiring a legend. You're bringing in a new host. Padma Lakshmi had certain attributes in spades. You're talking about stage presence. You're talking about authority. The fear Padma could strike in a chef testant was honestly one of the more appealing components of the show. That steely reaction she would have. You know, she sampled a quick fire dish. Was very much a part of the dramatic tension of Top Chef. Mm. I know that's a reality competition trope. Oh, the mean judge that you're terrified of. But it does provide just a certain dramatic weight to the show. Obviously, Padma became beloved by the chefs. They wanted to impress her. They were terrified to cook Indian food for her, but they ultimately loved her. And, you know, one of the things Top Chef does very well is it's able to capture competition. But at the end of the day, we're all a family. But it is just an enormous amount of stage presence you're talking about with yeah. Padma. And, you know, Kristen Kish obviously has her bones in television now. She's done a lot of different things. She is a Renaissance woman who's done everything from cookbooks. She has a restaurant in Austin, Texas, in the Line Hotel that bears her name. But it's still, you don't know how it's going to work until you get the boots on the ground.
Right. You can trade for Damian Lillard, and until Giannis Antetokounmpo and Damian Lillard lace up their shoes and play out on the floor, you don't really know how it's going to be. And Kristen, as you said, is very accomplished and not just an amazing chef. She also, Kevin, as you noted, was a co-host of a TV show, kind of a Anthony Bourdain type show where she was co-hosting with Cal Martino, one of my friends from, we grew up together, went to high school together. And she co-hosted that show where she would travel around the world, and it was called 36 Hours. And she was the host of a food show that she's got chops on that level too. So it's not just that she won Top Chef season 9. She's also has that TV presence, that stage presence that you talked about. It's going to be big shoes to fill, but I'm a big fan of Kristen. She was on the short list that you and I kind of drew up, was like, who can you imagine filling the shoes of Padma Lakshmi? And Kristen Kish is as good of a candidate as any.
And also, obviously, a veteran of the show in Seattle season 10 was, she is very much, it personifies kind of the evolution of the show. She was one of the first Last Chance Kitchen warriors, right? You might remember, Tom, you know, she got eliminated very controversially in Restaurant Wars of that episode as the executive chef. You might remember it got a little contentious. She and Josie over a bouillabaisse and some cream. And there was some throwing under the bus, as you might remember, in that mm-hmm. episode. But then she ended up winning several straight episodes in head-to-head Last Chance Kitchen matchups to work her way back into the final. And ended up winning the season. So that was kind of a fulcrum of the show, season 10, you know, kind of a halfway through yes. the current show history. And but so she is a mentioned veteran show, but it's going to be interesting. I mean, everyone says, what do you think? And the answer is, we'll find out. We'll find out. And in fairness to Kristen, I don't think anybody in the first half of the first season of their hosting tenure is ever going to be able to equal or eclipse Padma, but so some patience will be required, but it is a huge thing, and I'm as excited as anyone to see it. I don't know how it's going to play, and that's not a lack of confidence in Kristen. It's just, it's hard to remember the show before Padma. I mean, you almost can't imagine Top Chef without Padma, and that's a huge responsibility for Kristen. I don't envy her, we're gonna see early on.
It reminds me of when Spo took over for Pat Riley with the Miami Heat. How do you fill Pat Riley's shoes? Well, now Spo's one of the top 5 NBA coaches of all time. He's done very well for himself, even though, you know, he's not trying to be Pat Riley. He's his own person, and I think Kristen is well equipped to take this mantle and make it her own. So I'm excited for that. And I'm excited for the contestants here, Kevin. We've got 15 chefs that are part of this season. There are no returnees, which Kevin, as we just got off of an all-star cast, an all-star season. And also, like, in years past, Kevin, we've kind of had these different formulations where there's like a bracket of former top chefs who are competing in a little mini bracket to get onto the show, or they sprinkle in a Jen Carroll here or a Leon Wong there, and then they bring in some familiar faces. Not the case this year. This is 15 chefs who are well acclaimed, but they're not returnees. This is 15 new names that I think it's going to be exciting, a little bit different than last year where we kind of had some backgrounds, a track record, a familiarity with the chefs, and we could kind of pick our way through the scouting report based on past seasons. This one, it's 15 contestants, and I think what we're going to do here is you have three names that you are going to watch or have a keen eye on. I have three names that I've picked out. And we're also going to talk to CJ later about a particular hometown chef in Milwaukee. So we're going to run through this roster quickly and get your scout, Kevin. Who are you most interested in watching this season?
Yeah, and these aren't predictions of who I think is going to be in the final elimination challenge. These are just chefs whose bios interest me, who excite me either geographically or from their culinary tradition. And my first name is a chef from Houston, which is one of my favorite eating towns, Michelle Wallace. And she is the proprietor of Between Sandwich Shop. And the reason I love this is I love, Tom, a good concept born out of a city's farmer's market and festival scene. You know, because for those folks, every day is a Top Chef challenge to sort of, you know, cook for a 4-hour farmer's market where the lines are around the corner. And then the other reason, one of the other reasons I love Michelle Wallace as a contestant is biscuits, Tom, continue to be underutilized, maybe not in your neck of the woods in North Carolina, but certainly out here. The fact that the biscuit is still more of a novelty than a staple in American cuisine, to me, is a completely missed opportunity. And Michelle Wallace has many specialties, one of which is biscuits. She serves, Tom, I want you to hear this, shrimp with mango saffron glaze biscuit.
Whoa.
She also does a smoked crab and blue corn biscuit, Tom.
Whoa. Let's get it on the Bojangles menu here in North Carolina. Let's get that. How do we make that happen?
Michelle Wallace is doing her part to bring the biscuit and elevate it. And she's also worked at one of my favorite, actually one of my best meals of 2023, Tom, was in New Orleans at Pesh. She worked there. Mm. She has worked for Greg Gatlin, who is one of the deans of the Houston pitmaster community. So I like her lineage. I love what she's done on the ground in Houston, and I love her taste. So Michelle Wallace is one of my chefs to watch, Tom, for season 21.
All right. I have one too. Also in the South, Savannah Miller, hometown, Southern Pines, North Carolina, Moore County. Shout out to Moore County. That's, of course, the home of Pinehurst, which is a golf capital of America, or at least the cradle of American golf is right next door at of Southern Pines. So I've been to Southern Pines a whole bunch in my life. My grandparents retired to North Carolina in Pinehurst, not known for its cuisine, Kevin, but I love to see that a local girl is coming into this competition from North Carolina, who grew up in North Carolina, who currently lives in Durham as a chef de cuisine of M Tempora under Michael Lee, who is what it looks like. I haven't eaten there, but according to the bio, she spent 4 years running the kitchen for a 30-seat tasting menu restaurant, learning all about Japanese and Korean cuisine. So I'm imagining a sushi challenge or some sort of Korean challenge that she's going to bring in some Lexington barbecue or some sort of Southern barbecue twist on it. Very excited for Savannah Miller coming from Moore County. So a little bit of a homer pick for me. But that was really cool to see that she was on Top Chef 21.
Good deal. Keeping in the South, Kenny Nguyen is another one of my chefs to watch, largely because I'm in the tank for anyone bringing good vibes to Athens, Georgia. He is the exec chef of a very fun neighborhood joint there called The Expat. It used to be a French bistro. Now it's more of like an Italian trattoria. He's about to open his own Vietnamese place in Athens called Pretty Boy. I am pulling for him so that he can get some national shine ahead of the opening. Tom, Athens is never mentioned in the same breath as Ann Arbor or Chapel Hill or Boulder, but it is one of the great college towns in America. Obviously, its lineage in the music scene, what we used to call college music in the 80s, it has produced more of that great stuff than any place. Can he win as a result? Is a chef I'm going to watch, and you know, I'm looking forward to seeing what he can do.
Valentine Howell Jr. He's from Dorchester, Massachusetts. He was born in Boston. So of course, Kevin, as a New Englander, I got to rep Valentine Howell Jr., who is got a really strong resume here. He is an executive chef and also a James Beard Award finalist for Best Chef of Northeast in 2023. So he is peaking at the right time here in his career to come on to Top Chef and prove himself that, you know, not just the accolades and the awards from James Beard, but also he's flexing a lot of diverse culinary experiences where his international food concept, Black Cat Eatery, it's got some Mexican flair, shared plates of Caribbean, Afro-Latin, and Latin street foods. He's also got some TV experience on PBS as part of the Movable Feast. So he's got really a five-tool player here. I feel like he's got the TV side, he's got the awards, and he's got lots of diverse backgrounds that he's going to bring onto the show. Shout out to Dorchester and Valentine Howell Jr., who's on my list to watch for this upcoming season.
My last chef to watch is Rasika Venkatesa. Padma might be leaving Top Chef, and she is a native of Tamil Nadu, the state in India. But Rasika is a native as well. She grew up in Chennai, and she is going to bring Tamil cuisine to the show. That is her North Star. It's a great culinary tradition. You've had sambar, you've had dosa. Everything's always beautifully put on like a banana leaf. Love Tamil food. I got to eat it in Sri Lanka many years ago. She got her start at French Laundry. She is chef de cuisine at a restaurant in in San Francisco, in Soma, a Moroccan restaurant called Marad. And apparently right now she is traveling around her home state of Tamil Nadu to soak up even more of that culinary tradition. She seems like a great way to kind of honor Padma's legacy. And I'm going to be watching, just kind of love when one of the things that I think the show's done so well in recent years is really there's just more international cuisine present in every single quick fire challenge and every single elimination challenge. And this continues in that tradition. So I am watching Rasika.
Another San Francisco connection here with David Murphy. David Murphy is the chef and co-owner of Shuggie's Trash Pie and Natural Wine. Have not been there, but it is on the best new restaurant list from, get this lineup here, Esquire, Bon Appetit, and the New York Times. Shuggie's serves sexy share plates and grandma-style pizzas. Kevin, what's a grandma-style pizza? I'm envisioning just very basic, like pepperonis and lots of mozzarella cheese.
I have no idea. My grandmother did not make pizza. Yeah. My grandmother made Kugel. Okay. So yeah. I have no experience in this.
My grandmother ordered pizza. Yeah. My grandmother said, hey, where's the nearest Papa John's or where's the nearest Domino's Pizza Hut? That was grandma style pizza. But David Murphy, I'm sold as, you know, I have a dog named Piper that I rescued a couple years ago. And so, of course, whenever you can sneak in a dog reference in your bio, I'm a big fan. So David resides in San Francisco with his partner and their slightly famous bulldog named Beef. Kevin, how much do you want to meet Beef one day? Doesn't that sound awesome?
I don't know that I would ever want to name a dog, an animal after a food.
Beef.
I would love to meet Beef one day. Beef is a great name for a bulldog. Yes, indeed. And I love the slightly famous are my favorite kind of famous. Just the slightly famous. Do a quick rundown, Tom. I mean, there are a lot of interesting chefs also in the field. Alicia Lenz is sort of from that ranks of kind of the private chef and event company. We see more and more of sort of the private chefs are really proliferating in certain markets. She's out of Chicago, where there is wealth, there is a need for private chefs. And it's actually a really fascinating way. It is a kind of a Top Chef, a Top Chef challenge every day. Who else is on the list, Tom? We want to run through them real quick.
Yeah, so Amanda Turner from Arlington, Texas, she's got a little bit of a Kristen Kish connection here. I think they probably know each other because she is a chef in Austin, Texas at Ella May. She's the chef de cuisine. So I do kind of like those moments where the judge will like look at one of the contestants and be like, hey, remember we used to, you know, Buddha had certainly a lot of that last year.
Amanda Turner, who has worked for Paul Key. Tom, we'll tease it for our subscribers. You're very likely going to get the Tom Haberstroh definitive top 10 top chefs of all time coming as a premium item, very likely in the near future. Well, she worked for him as well as for Tyson Cole at Uchi. So she is part of the powerhouse Austin scene. And she also very intriguing chef testant making their way into season 21.
And then Charlie Pierre is also a Massachusetts guy. He's a chef in New Orleans, the head chef and owner of Frite. And so we have another New Orleans tie in there. Danny Garcia from Brooklyn. Where Brooklyn at? He is the executive chef of the Saga It Hospitality Group. And Kalina Bliss, she is the executive chef of Chicago Athletic Association. Interesting background there. And of Cindy's Rooftop there in Chicago. Who else we got on this list?
We also have Manny Barella, who was an emerging chef named by James Beard. Native of Mexico, cooks out of Denver, which is actually one of the kind of low-key, one of the best Mexican food places in America. We also have Kevin D'Andrea, a French native who works in Austin, Texas. He's a French pastry guy. You know, you don't get a lot of pastry chefs. You know, dessert, Tom, always kind of kryptonite on Top Chef. Maybe this is a guy who can kind of do a little market inefficiency, you know? And so he's an interesting candidate.
Yeah, we also have Laura Ozilmaz. I'm going to butcher that. And I'm sorry, Laura. Everyone butchers my last name, too. So apologies there. But she is from Acapulco, Mexico, and also in San Francisco. Mays, our producer, I mean, he might be our best scout here, as all these chefs seem to have places in San Francisco. She is a executive chef and owner of Delita. So a big San Francisco contingency here on Top Chef Season 21.
And finally, Tom, we have Dan Jacobs, except I'm not going to do the intro on Dan Jacobs. We're going to have our next guest, CJ Krawcheck, who is a Milwaukee native, knows Dan personally, and it will give us a scout on that. And then after CJ, we are then going to discuss some very controversial rule changes, huge kind of tectonic shifts in rule changes of Top Chef for season 21 that we can all expect, and we can debate those a little bit.
Let's hear from CJ.
Very special guest now. CJ Krawcheck is a lifetime resident of Milwaukee. He knows all things Milwaukee, Wisconsin, all things Milwaukee food. He is a dean of the city, its culinary scene, its ethnic tapestry, its culture. He is my favorite person to spend time with when I am in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And he is going to make the affirmative case for Milwaukee as Top Chef destination. I think it took a lot of people around the country. We're confused. What they don't know is what CJ knows, which is it is an ideal Top Chef.
Yeah, yeah.
Destination. CJ, how are you?
I'm doing well. It's so nice to be here with you, gents, on your debut episode here in the relaunch Pack Your Knives. I'm honored.
I feel like we need you here, CJ, because I am one of those people who are confused, surprised. Wisconsin, Top Chef Wisconsin, Kevin's native Atlanta, his home city, didn't get Top Chef. Once again, we were kind of, you know, volleying for that, lobbying for that. And of course, they threw us a curveball. And what you're saying here, Kevin, what you've been telling me is that Milwaukee is going to take that fastball or that curveball and just hit it out of the park like it's Robin Yount circa 1990 Milwaukee Brewers. Is that correct, CJ? You feel like this is going to be a great season because people are sleeping on the city of Milwaukee as not just a culinary city, but also just as an awesome city in America.
I do feel strongly about that, as Kevin said. And while you guys might have been surprised, as somebody who has been entertaining friends and clients and family members who come to town for decades, I was not surprised. because Milwaukee is it's not only a culinary sleeper, it's a sleeper of a destination. We have a lot going for us. And one of the things we have going for us, Tom, frankly, is that perception that you just talked about.
Yeah.
You know, it's easier to impress people when they come in and they kind of shrug their shoulders and their expectations are maybe low for reasons that, you know, they just haven't experienced it. And then there's a unique brand of hospitality in Milwaukee, and it extends to the restaurants. And part of that is just kind of our culture, the city's culture. It's a very welcoming place. It is a pretty humble place, honestly. Like, we don't self-promote maybe as well as we should. We like to kind of prove it on the field or on the court. And I think our restaurants do that. There's a couple of things that Milwaukee has going for it that I think you're going to see throughout the season. And some of them are structural advantages, and I think some of them are cultural advantages. From a pure food perspective, one of the things that Milwaukee has going for it that people maybe don't realize is it
Jeez.
Has
access. No, okay, sorry. That's just,
I'm getting there. That's yeah. You're right. That's where I'm going, is access to ingredients. I mean, one of the things that Wisconsin has is, yes, it's America's dairy land, and we're known for dairy farms and cheese. There's also just spectacular ingredients that are grown nearby these restaurants that you're going to see and these places you're going to see. And it extends beyond dairy. It goes to proteins, it goes to vegetables, lake seafood, and the like. So I don't think people realize necessarily that, you know, this land was picked for a reason. It's fertile land, it's farmland. And when, you know, a farm to table is kind of a hackneyed term, but when chefs are cooking seasonally, their ability to go to markets and see things at peak ripeness and fold them into their menus, that's a huge part of that movement, right? It's access more than creativity necessarily. And Wisconsin has that in spades. And I think you're going to see that highlighted. You're going to see local producers with just mind-boggling ingredients that are readily accessible here. There are culinary traditions here that are really interesting. Most of it from the dawn of the city is Eastern European and Slavic influenced. But you have these multi-generational recipes that end up in restaurant culture and end up in food culture. And it's a pretty rich, somewhat narrow, you know, tradition, but it's a really well-developed tradition. And I think you're going to see that come through. And a lot of the basis for that is, you know, people trying to feed working class families delicious food without a tremendous amount of resources behind it. So they're finding simple food and simple ingredients and trying to present it to their families or to their patrons in a way that is straightforward and is delicious. So I think you're going to see those traditions come through.
I want to talk about Three Brothers, which my understanding is becomes a major part of the Top Chef season. It is a place you and I have dined together. It is a place where, Tom, I know like we've talked, the San Antonio Spurs, in honor of its Serbian tradition, have entertained Greg Popovich. It is a place that I believe becomes a huge character, really, in this upcoming Top Chef season. And it is also, it just kind of represents that Milwaukee-ness.
My cheat code in Milwaukee is when I bring in people from the coasts, people who are used to dining at Michelin star restaurants or in gleaming rooms that cost $10 million to build out. We don't have any of those here. Okay. Mm. And if we, to the extent that we do, they're more seen as kind of corporate restaurants that maybe are not necessarily in the heart of Milwaukee culinary tradition. When I bring people to town, like I did during the NBA finals, I take them to Three Brothers first. They dine in a restaurant that is 75 years old. Their food is served on Formica tables. They are literally eating the heart food of probably the most important culinary family still working in the city. And it is just, I wouldn't call it low art, but it is something, I'm not trying to impress these people necessarily with things that maybe they've seen in other cities. Three Brothers is a unique kind of immigrant experience restaurant. It's an utterly unique place. It's in an old Schlitz Tide House, back when, you know, the breweries could actually have taverns. They're, whenever you see them sprinkled around the Midwest, they're kind of special places. And it's just, it's a one of one. And somehow, either maybe between you, Kevin, or me, or other people who got to the producers, one thing I will say about the Top Chef producers is they found all the stuff. They went into the city with open eyes, and they tried to find the institutions that make Milwaukee, Milwaukee. And they started, my understanding is, their first two meals, especially that first day, was at Three Brothers. And they fell in love with the city in the same way that I make people fall in love in the city, is eating burek and eating chicken paprikash and eating shababshi in the most simple, uncomplicated place and just being blown away. And Malunka Radicevic, who now runs the kitchen there, is as good of a host as you can have to introduce somebody to the city. And my understanding is she does pop up here during the course of the season, which is my favorite thing by far that happened during the course of the season.
So CJ, from an outsider, I'm here in Charlotte, grew up in New York area in Connecticut, and I have this image of what Milwaukee food is like. And the first thing that pops up is cheese and dairy. And, you know, when you talk to people in Philly, sometimes they get a little provincial about their cheesesteaks, and some might be a little above the cheese. Say, if you really want to eat, you know, real Philadelphia food, you ditch the cheesesteaks and go somewhere else. What is it about Milwaukee that you think lends itself to a wonderful dairy culinary capital? But also, do you think that it's overplayed, underplayed, or correctly played? It's basically identification as a dairy and cheese capital.
I mean, there's a reason why, you know, when I think of cheese, I don't think of cheese heads. I don't think of novelty items. I don't think of like kind of reductive regional jokes. I think of like Pleasant Ridge Reserve cheese and like the Uplands cheese, which makes as good a cheese as anywhere in the world. Blakesville Creamery. Like, we have world championship level cheesemakers that are in Wisconsin that are doing like slow food movement, really important cheeses that are celebrated around the world. And, you know, when that gets filtered through, you know, culture and such, maybe it gets a little bit of a warped perspective. But one thing I will say about Wisconsin is Wisconsin's food is absolutely delicious. It's maybe not the most health conscious food in the world, right? Like, a lot of times when I bring people through their weekend blowouts here, they look at me and go, how do you do this every weekend? Like, this is, you know, so how it translates to the plate, which I think what you're saying, Tom, is we don't necessarily have that one, or that one item that's maybe something that defines us. Although you're going to hear a lot about frozen custard on this on this trip, and people don't understand what that is, and it's hard to describe. Like, I think the Platonic ideal of something that's better than gelato, something that's better than ice cream, but is also the richest, butteriest. You know, you go to Leon's, which I understand the producers and the hosts did a lot, and you have a scoop of butter pecan. I mean,
it's a divine experience.
So that can be a life-changing experience.
Did you take Giannis there?
I did not take Giannis there. I have a funny Giannis story, which is there is another custard place called Cops, which is the most famous custard place in Milwaukee. It has a flavor of the day that people track almost to the point of obsession.
CJ, I have on my phone, my Cops app is on my, I live 1,700 miles away, and I check that flavor every single day, hoping for German apple streusel.
What do you mean you check for German apple streusel? You mean you're waiting, you're going to ship it to your house? What is that? How?
No. By the way, the saddest day of the last 4 years for me was when Cops stopped shipping nationally.
Yeah.
But yeah, I did actually, Giannis taunted me on a True Hoop TV episode by sitting down with Cops several years ago.
And that's Giannis Antetokounmpo, NBA MVP, Finals MVP, yes, champion, who's just a delight. So, Kevin, that was one of the coolest things, watching you go through that whole experience with Giannis. Yeah,
I interrupted CJ's story, but just to interject that I endorse Cops and am a sort of faraway obsessor and admirer of Cops, and go generally every single day when I'm in Milwaukee and pay for it later when I get home.
I got to see Giannis eat maybe one of the first high caloric meals of his time in Milwaukee. The building that I'm in is owned by now Herb Kohl's trust. The legendary senator just passed away a few months ago, has been my landlord in this building for the last 27 years. And it is where the Bucks operations were for decades. Next door to it is a bar restaurant that is owned by the Cops group called Elsa's. And Giannis's first meal was a riff on a Big Mac that Elsa's does. And Dan Smicek, who you probably both know, who is head of public relations for the Bucks, texted me on that fateful day in 2013, sometime in July or maybe late June, and said, "Do you want to meet him?" And I said, "I sure do." So I popped down from my office and I walked into a table and I was confronted by then 18-year-old Giannis Antetokounmpo, who maybe weighed 190 pounds.
Yeah.
And he was eating a version of a Big Mac that Elsa served that had to be every bit of 1,500 calories. And I think that was the first of many as he transformed his body over those years. And I don't know if he had frozen custard to end that meal, but I wouldn't be surprised.
Hey, so CJ, we've got a new set of 15 contestants, and I do believe there's a hometown chef on this roster here. Dan Jacobs from Chicago is a Milwaukee resident and chef and owner of Esterev. Am I pronouncing that right? Esterev?
It is. It's for Esterev, I believe. Him and his partner, Dan Van Wright's grandmother's names are Esther and Evelyn, and that is their kind of food-focused chef's table, small number of seats. I think Esterev maybe has 15 seats or so. So that is one of the two restaurants that Dan runs, Esterev.
And can you give us a scouting report of what we can expect from Dan or maybe his restaurants in Milwaukee? Where is it?
Happy to. Dan is somebody that I'm proud to call a friend. Dan has cooked all around town at some of the most important restaurants during kind of the renaissance of Milwaukee restaurants before he opened up his own, he and Dan Van Wright. They have a mission style Chinese restaurant that's cleverly called Dan Dan, both of their first names, that has been around, you know, I think 6 or 7 years now, maybe longer. And then inside Dan Dan, when it was started, was Esterev. And now Esterev was just recently announced is going to be moving to its own physical location outside of that restaurant. But they kind of did a restaurant and then a room inside that restaurant. And I think what, you know, you find out about Dan, who's also opened a French bistro with his partner over the time, is that he's a very versatile chef. Being able to cook mission style Chinese food and some of the things, the Asian influenced food. Esterev is very much you know, kind of a degustation style, multi-course menu with wine pairings that has a very family feel to it, where he and Dan are trading dishes a lot of times. It feels very personal to them, and it's excellent. And, you know, they've also executed French food at a high level. So I think Dan can do it all. Dan's a relentless worker. And I think that those skills will probably translate very well. I'm not trying to influence people to draft Dan, but Dan seems to have a really good skill set that whatever they throw at him, he's a chef that doesn't just oversee and tweeze food. He's somebody who cooks food. He's somebody who I think will be able to roll up his sleeves and be really good in a competition like this.
CJ, I'm so thrilled you were able to join us. Expect calls and various inquiries over the course of the season. You are now our official in-house consultant for season 21 Top Chef Milwaukee or Top Chef Wisconsin, as it were. Thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, it's been a pleasure. I wish you guys really a lot of luck on this. I'm going to the official opening party on March 20th and watching it with Visit Milwaukee. And I think the city is really going to get behind this. I really think that you're going to see a lot of people activated over it. And from what I hear, the city and the state, let's not forget that they shot in Madison as well and some outstate locations. I think it's going to do a heck of a thing for tourism in Milwaukee because, you know, Kevin, you've experienced, Tom, I hope to be able to host you here sometime, you know, a weekend where we come into town and we do Three Brothers and then we brunch at Uncle Wolfie's and we go to Kalu Kenzo at night. It doesn't get better. And I've been fortunate to eat and travel all around the world. And I know I'm biased, but I really think that Milwaukee is going to show out.
I'm already looking at direct flights from here to Milwaukee. Thank you so much, CJ.
Good luck, fellas. Really a pleasure. I can't wait to subscribe and to watch all season.
Always love talking to CJ. Love visiting with him, dining with him in Milwaukee. It's always a great time. And Tom, I did that in September during the taping of Top Chef. I am not at liberty. I have signed away my life in an NDA, so I'm not at liberty to tell you what I witnessed. But suffice it to say, I have probably some insider knowledge of who has survived the first several weeks. And as a result, I am ineligible to participate in the Pack Your Knives Season 21 draft. And that is another good time for us to tell our listeners, become a founding member of our chef's table, of the Pack Your Knife chef's table, $250 for the full year. And among the perks, you will get to draft my team against Tom on my behalf. Tom, you're going to do this. We're going to aggregate the collective draft boards of all of our founding members in order to draft my team. Put it in trust because, again, I have specialized knowledge. Despite the fact that I cannot remember all of the chefs that were still surviving, I need to recuse myself from the draft. I'm going to let the founding members draft on my behalf. In addition to that, there are also, Tom, some other rule changes we need to discuss for not for Pack Your Knives fantasy, but for actual Top Chef on the ground.
Yeah. And Kevin, I got to say, I was excited when you texted me the other day saying like, I actually don't remember the faces of the people I saw on the show, which is good. I feel like, I was working behind the eight ball this season that, you had kind of been boots on the ground for one of the episodes this year. But you also, I think, are excited for the changes this year, excited to see how it plays out, because every year there's like a little bit of a facelift, a little bit of a tweak here or there, just like in baseball with a pitch clock, or in basketball, they add, a Elam ending, whatever it is. There is going to be a little bit of a tweak in the rules this year in Top Chef with, of course, Kristen Kish coming aboard as the host. Gail's still there. Tom is still there. The whole setup of the show still remains. The foundation of the quickfire and the elimination challenges. Seems like everything is still in place except for one thing. The quickfire is no longer going to award immunity to the winner for the elimination challenge. And in fact, the winner of the quickfire is going to get a prize, a cash prize or some sort of award for winning the quickfire instead of winning immunity. So that does change things for the gamesmanship, the game theory, the who do you want to draft on your team if you have to draft a team for your elimination challenge later in the episode. However, Kevin, there will be immunity this season, just not with the quickfire. The immunity this time will be for the elimination challenge winner. I'm going to say that again. The immunity is for the elimination challenge winner for the next episode. Wow. Okay. This is a game changer. It won't kind of revolutionize Top Chef, Kevin, but it does kind of make you think a little bit more about strategy, doesn't it?
Absolutely. And I was thinking about this overnight because at first I was a little skeptical of these rule changes, but I've decided I really like it for the following reasons. Winning the elimination challenge, it gets you a lot of points in the Pack Your Knives fantasy system. But other than warding off elimination, by definition, because you've won, you don't really get anything. You get confidence. And you know, we see that in the chef testimonials, right, Tom? Where he's like, wow, it felt great to win last week at the top of the next episode. I'm really, cooking my best food. But at the end of the day, if you think about it, you don't get, other than, and we can talk forever about, hey, subconsciously to the chef, to the judges, start to internalize who the best chef is. So when they finally get on the chopping block, maybe they're given a benefit of the doubt because they've won before and they've proved they can really cook. But other than that, other than these sort of amorphous kind of abstract advantages, there really has never been a reward, again, other than not being eliminated, for winning the elimination, which, let's face it, is a much bigger deal than winning the quickfire. The quickfire is more of a novelty, a smaller challenge. The elimination is the thing. And so it only makes sense. I kind of like this new change, which is, hey, if you want the real prize, which is immunity, you got to win the big one, elimination the previous week. Now, by the way, if you want cash, which is, hey, nobody's going to turn down cash, you win the quickfire, but it won't help you survive or prosper necessarily in the larger competition. You will get a cash prize. You will get the confidence that is bestowed upon you for having beaten 7, 8, 9, 10, 12 other chefs, that for those 45 minutes. But I do like this new kind of allocation of reward where the cash goes with the quick fire, but the real thing, the immunity, the guaranteed survival for another week goes with the much bigger task, which is the elimination challenge. So I am very on board with this rule change after thinking about it.
I'm actually warming up to it too. And here's why. I remember, you might remember this too. I drafted Natalie, number one, Natalie Moransky, number one, I believe, in Top Chef Kentucky in the draft, because she had won the first episode of that season's elimination challenge. She won. And so I drafted her number one overall because I had some data that suggested the winner of the first elimination challenge has a disproportionate lead on winning the entire competition. That if you win that first one, that is a signal that you've got what it takes to win Top Chef. And then she got booted the next episode. And it submarined my entire fantasy season. And it made me rethink everything. But that wasn't the only one, right? Natalie was just one in the Top Chef Seattle season 10 with Kristen as the winner. The first two elimination challenge winners, Kevin, booted the next episode after they won the elimination challenge. So the first episode winner, gone this episode two. Second episode winner, gone by episode three. So this is kind of safeguarding against that. And I hadn't really considered that point that you just made, is that like, yeah, winning elimination challenge is great, but there should be a little bit more weight to it. And this definitely gives that weight.
Yeah, I really, really like it. It's logical. I like sort of making a distinction between quickfire and elimination a little bit greater. I love both. Quickfires are a blast. And frankly, it is kind of fun to watch them compete for money. I mean, it's two different competitions. It's a different, you know, one is sort of for mortality on the show. The other is, hey, I'm gonna go home and in my new endeavor to start my brick and mortar restaurant. This goes a long way. And I love seeing people win cash. It's fun. So Tom, I could not be more excited for season 21. Closing thoughts as we get ready to watch the season premiere?
First, everyone listening, packyourknives.com. Sign up for free at our Substack. Lots of really cool coverage. We're going to be doing extra this season, and paid subscribers, $50 a year. Just one-time payment. You get the entire year. We're going to be doing coverage in the off-season as well. So stay tuned for that. And if you sign up in the next week, we are going to have $10 off that $50 paid subscription fee for the entire year. So it'd be 40 instead of 50. And of course, we already talked about the founding members. But if you're listening, you are excited for season 21. I'm excited for this new quickfire elimination challenge tweak. I'm also curious, Kevin, about the fact that quickfire is now going to be part of the calculus on an elimination challenge judges table. So they'll probably be able to say like, hey, you screwed up that souffle for the quickfire, and that's going to be our tiebreaker. And sorry, pack your knives and go. Also, is Kristen going to do the pack your knives and go line, or is she going to have her own little catchphrase at the end? I hope she keeps it, but we'll see. Lots to get into this season. I'm excited. And thanks to CJ for hopping on and mixing it up with us about Wisconsin. I'm sold. And I'm excited for this upcoming year that we're going to do bigger and better at Pack Your Knives. So glad you guys are going to be listening with us.
For Tom Haberstroh and producer Anthony Mays, this is Kevin Arnovitz, and this is Pack Your Knives.